From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Monday, November 1st.
We do not have to cage nearly as many people as we do in this country. And if anyone thinks that mass incarceration is just a natural response to crime upticks, they are wrong.
That was Atiya Hawley, an attorney at the Southern Center for Human Rights. I spoke with her and the organization's executive director, Sarah Titanchi, about violence in Georgia prisons. That's a bit later, but first, your morning headlines. Speaking at the G20 summit, President Joe Biden pledged on Sunday to help with the global supply chain problems.
Supply chains are something that most of our citizens never think twice about until something goes wrong. And during this pandemic, we've seen delays and backlogs of goods from automobiles to electronics, from shoes to furniture.
Biden announced that he would cut red tape that's delayed goods flowing from Southeast Asia. He also offered technical assistance to break bottlenecks that are slowing supply routes through Mexico and Central America, and signed an executive order that allows the Pentagon to quickly release material from the National Defense Stockpile. American Airlines canceled over 1,300 flights this weekend, citing weather and staffing problems. American Airlines Chief Operating Officer David Seymour released a statement saying the cancellations were necessary to ensure properly crewed flights. The disruption comes just weeks after Southwest Airlines faced multiple delays of cancellations affecting over 2,000 flights. Southwest had cited air traffic control and weather-related issues. As we enter November and a busy holiday travel season, the big question is whether these same issues will continue. A mandatory vaccination deadline for federal TSA workers has been set for November 22nd, the Monday before Thanksgiving. Only 60% of TSA employees are currently vaccinated. Ohio will be joining several other states in outfitting prison guards with body cameras. The hope is that the cameras will help reduce violence while also holding inmates and officers more accountable. Ohio started looking into using body cameras after a California judge ordered them for guards at the San Diego State Prison, following allegations of abuse against prisoners with disabilities. The union representing prison employees contends that the money would be better spent hiring more guards. Georgia piloted body cameras on its correctional staff last year and plans to outfit officers at two prisons this year. Georgia prisons have recently been in the national spotlight after the Department of Justice opened an investigation into endemic prison violence, creating possible constitutional violations for inmates. We discussed this with Executive Director Sarah Titanchi and attorney Atiya Hawley, both from the Southern Center for Human Rights. Sarah and Atiya, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us, Rena.
You bet. Atiya, I was wondering if you could start us off and sort of describe the problem here. What are the conditions at the state prisons in the state of Georgia?
Well, first, I just want to thank you for covering this important issue. The crisis in our prisons touches so many lives, the tens of thousands of people in Georgia's prisons, as well as the hundreds of thousands of people who love them and call them family. And I mean, I just want to note that Georgia's prisons have frankly never been safe, right? People have always received inadequate medical care and inadequate mental health care. But what we have seen in the last year or so has been astounding and frankly just shocks the conscience. In the last year or so, we have seen an unprecedented number of homicides and suicides. Prior to 2020, there were maybe three or four people who died per year at the hands of other incarcerated people. And in 2020, there were over 25. The same is true of suicide. We used to have a handful of people who took their own lives year to year. And by the time we reached out to the Department of Justice to take action in Georgia's prisons, there were close to 14, and eight more people killed themselves after that. We are just seeing astounding levels of violence, astounding levels of people who cannot find a reason to live anymore. And we can talk about the understaffing, we can talk about the riots that have occurred as a result of these conditions, but these are things that should not happen in prisons. And these are things that we should not consider normal. And that is why our office has stepped up with litigation. And that's why we've asked the federal government to step in as well.
Sarah, is Georgia's Department of Corrections doing anything about it?
We are hard-pressed to see what the Georgia Department of Corrections is doing to address the human rights crisis that is unfolding on a daily basis in Georgia prisons. Atiyah and I have worked on the front lines of prison advocacy for about 20 years, and we have never seen anything like this. The callous disregard for the people who are incarcerated in Georgia and the apathy of people who are leading the system and could actually do something about it.
Atiyah, according to your organization, the Southern Center for Human Rights, in Georgia, one out of every 18 adults is under some form of correctional control, meaning incarceration, probation, or parole. Georgia has the highest rate of correctional supervision in the country. Why is that?
The answers are quite simple. Not only have the highest rate of correctional control, but we are ranked fourth or fifth in the world in terms of our incarceration rate in the world. And it's because we have this addiction to incarceration. We pronounce extremely lengthy sentences for a range of offenses. And the way that we have our criminal legal system set up is that people feel that if they are able to get probation, no matter how long, to avoid going into a cage, whether it be jail or prison, they are going to take that probation sentence. But in Georgia, it is not uncommon to sit in a courtroom and see people get sentenced to 20 years of probation, 30 years of probation, basically signing their lives over to probation companies, probation offices. People often cycle through these probation sentences in large part because you give up so many rights when you're on probation. You give up your Fourth Amendment rights. You give up so many rights. And so the police have a much easier time arresting you if you're on probation. We see probation sentences, again, of 20, 30 years. We also see probation sentences for the most minuscule traffic offenses. In Georgia, we criminalize everything, right? Failure to yield at a sign, speeding, what have you, things that would typically be considered citations or even non-criminal in other states, you can get upwards of a year in jail for here in Georgia. And so it is because we have basically criminalized everything and imposed the longest sentences possible for these offenses. That is why you see Georgia at the top of the probation and correctional control pyramid in this country, in the incarceration period in this world.
You, along with your organizations, filed a lawsuit on behalf of the people held in solitary confinement at Georgia state prisons. On top of that, the Department of Justice has opened up a civil investigation into Georgia prisons. Tell us a little bit about the legal action happening.
So there's quite a bit of it, right, as you just outlined. And our office decided to take legal action against various officials responsible for Georgia State Prison because of just the horrors that were being committed there. The irony of Georgia State Prison is that it is a special mission prison, quote unquote. And by that term, it is supposed to provide specialized care to people with psychiatric disabilities, mental illness. But what we are hearing from our clients day in and day out, and what the department's own records show, is that Georgia State Prison is falling far from its stated mission of providing that specialized care, who say that they are being denied food days at a time, who are being denied showers weeks at a time, and who have not stepped foot outside for months on end. And this combination of conditions leads to the most, at least a decompensation for people who are already mentally ill. And unfortunately, this prison's solution to mental health crises is to place people in acute crisis units. And these acute crisis units, when our clients arrive there, are covered in the feces and blood of the previous occupants. And people are not provided beds. One client of ours, because he was so cold, he took the sandwich wrappers and created a bed on the floor, not only because he was cold, but because the bed frame that he was provided was covered in bodily fluids. And so this is Georgia State's prison's answer to mental illness. And it should come as no surprise that this one prison alone accounts for a third of Georgia's overall prison suicides. And furthermore, Georgia has known about this. Auditors have said over and over the last several years that the situation at Georgia State prisons will lead to decompensation and will lead to self-injury and self-harm because of the solitary confinement and the conditions there. And the response from Georgia's Department of Corrections has been little to nothing. And in fact, suicides have increased since the auditors have made their reports. And so that is why we took that legal action.
Sarah, in a press release, the Department of Justice said that it had succeeded in previous investigations in, and I'm quoting here, identifying systemic constitutional violations and their causes, fixing those causes and stopping the violations. Does the Justice Department have a good track record here? Are you hopeful their investigation will change things?
We are extremely grateful to the Department of Justice for intervening in Georgia, answering our call that we had made a year to the date before they intervened. It is a huge step forward in our struggle for accountability and for dignity and for justice for people who are currently incarcerated in Georgia and for those whose lives have been lost. And we know it is just one piece of the puzzle. There is frankly so much that is in chaos that is unfolding in the Georgia Department of Corrections. And it is our sincere hope that this investigation will make the kind of change that we so desperately need here in our state.
I think when you're not around people who are incarcerated, when you don't have family members who are involved, this whole issue is so removed. Tell me about some of the stories you're hearing from family members of incarcerated prisoners.
I mean, they're devastating, right? I'm remembering one person whose loved one actually gave birth in prison. And she shared with us that the baby's mother was currently being held in solitary because that was the prison's practice when it came to pregnant people. But not only that, whenever this mother was moved from one place to another, she was shackled. And this not only violates state law, but it is just completely unacceptable and cruel that we would treat people in this manner. And so the stories that we hear are from people who are desperate to do everything they can for their loved ones, and who are frankly the bravest people that we know, because they do this knowing that there could be retaliation against their loved ones. There could be retaliation against them as the loved one themselves. And they speak out nevertheless because their loved ones' lives depends on it.
We've got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Sarah Tatanchi and Atiya Hawley of the Southern Center for Human Rights. You're listening to the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod. I'm here with Sarah Tatanchi and Atiya Hawley of the Southern Center for Human Rights, and we're talking about the Georgia prison system. Sarah, I'm curious, what type of policy and legislation do you think could make a difference?
We are heartened by the actions of the Department of Justice under President Biden. This is a very significant move for this department to intervene in a system-wide kind of way. Frequently, when they get involved, they will look at individual facilities. But what they've done in Georgia is taken a system-wide approach. And that, to me, signals a great interest from the administration to address the humanitarian crisis that continues to unfold. I think we need to take a big step back and look at the way that we incarcerate. As Atiya talked about, we have an addiction to incarceration, not just in Georgia, but nationwide. We look at incarceration as a cure for all the things we find less desirable in our communities, whether it's people who are unhoused, whether it's people who have mental health issues, people who have addictions. We look to incarceration to solve all of these problems, and it is a solution that is just not working. Where we are at is we have prisons that are busting at the seams, that are incredibly dangerous. We cannot feed this addiction any further.
Atiya, let's talk about COVID. It's killed people in prisons and jails three times the rate of the general public. How has the Georgia Department of Corrections handled the pandemic?
We really have not known the answer to that question for the last 3 months because the department used to maintain an online COVID tracker that would be updated every day with information about the number of people who test positive in the Department of Corrections, incarcerated people and staff who self-report. But in July of this year, the department inexplicably announced that it was discontinuing its publicly available information because it felt basically that the pandemic was over. And the irony of this announcement is that it almost coincided exactly with the surge in the Delta variant in Georgia and across the country. And so at this moment, we have no idea how many people are testing positive for COVID. We have no idea how many people have died in the last 3 months from COVID and the Delta variant. We have no idea how many people are being vaccinated. And as you note, prisons are one of the deadliest places to be during this pandemic. You cannot social distance. Our clients do not have unlimited access to cleaning supplies and such. All the things that we take for granted that we can do out here in the community to protect ourselves cannot be done easily in the prison setting. And so we are very concerned about the havoc that COVID is wreaking on the inside.
Before we go, in the few seconds we have left, I'd like to ask both of you, Sarah, starting with you, what do you want people to know about mass incarcerations and how can people make a difference?
We frequently hear from people who are woken up about the crisis of mass incarceration because a loved one of theirs has become involved. We can't wait for everybody's loved ones to get involved, for our community, for our country to wake up about the crisis of mass incarceration. The cost, the human cost, the financial cost, the moral cost is just too great for us to bear. And now in this day and age where we are paying such close attention to issues of racial justice, of economic justice, of gender justice, there is no area of our community that needs more attention than our criminal legal system and the way that we incarcerate people. So I encourage people to listen, to learn. I want to thank them for listening to this story and educating themselves about what's happening in Georgia. Keep your ears and your eyes open and share these stories with your families.
We do not have to cage nearly as many people as we do in this country. And if anyone thinks that mass incarceration is just a natural response to crime upticks, they are wrong. Mass incarceration is a natural outgrowth of slavery. It's a natural outgrowth of lynching. It's a natural outgrowth of Jim Crow. And it's the last, or one of the last areas that has remained untouched by our civil rights movements. It is past time for everyone, as Sarah mentioned, regardless of whether you are touched by it or not, to get involved, because this is a human rights issue and it's a civil rights issue. And the United States can no longer afford to be the world's prison capital.
Sarah Tatanji, Atiyah Holly, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
World leaders are gathering in Glasgow for day two of the COP26 climate summit. The 12-day summit is a test to see if global cooperation can help solve the climate crisis. The goal of the summit is to convince larger nations to reduce emissions, commit financial support for poorer countries who have dealt with climate-related disasters, and to iron out rules for the Paris Climate Agreement. President Joe Biden will arrive later this morning. The leaders of two of the top climate-polluting nations, China and Russia, are not expected to attend. The conservative-leaning Supreme Court will hold opening arguments in the United States versus Texas. That's a challenge to Texas Senate Bill 8, an abortion restriction law passed earlier this year. Instead of discussing the legality of the 6-week abortion ban, the court will instead discuss the part of the Texas bill that allows anyone to sue whoever abets an abortion. That includes the performing doctor and even the patient's driver. The ruling could come into play on December 1st, when the Supreme Court will hear a case challenging Mississippi's ban on the procedure after 15 weeks of pregnancy, a direct challenge to Roe v. Wade. Today marks the beginning of National Native American Heritage Month, first declared by President George H.W. Bush. The month is an acknowledgement of the contributions of National American Indians and Alaska Natives. Several national events will mark the month, including an online exhibition at the National Museum of the American Indian. To kick off the celebration, Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland will be joined virtually by the first Native American U.S. Poet Laureate, Joy Harjo, for a poetry reading. Have a good day, everyone. I'll see you back tomorrow. This is a Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. Our thanks to Executive Director Sarah Tatanji and Managing Attorney Atiyah Holly of the Southern Center for Human Rights for joining us. If you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and do leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.